This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuned in to the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. We're nearing the end of 2018, so before we say goodbye to this eventful year and usher in 2019, let's rewind a couple of interesting I Love KL episodes that encapsulated what the city is all about. As the city progressively develops, old traits and ways of doing things have to slowly make way, which is why it's quite interesting when we discovered a 90-year-old shop that is still selling and fixing clocks and watches all the way in Klang. Robert Lee, the third generation in the Wah Sang family line, runs the business now, and he shared with us the history of the trade. Here's the snippet of that interview that was aired last July. I have to admit that having been given the opportunity to explore this story, I can't help but remember my own childhood. I used to frequent a shop exactly like Wah Sang Brothers years ago when my dad brought me there to fix our household's clocks and watches that were broken. I remember admiring the technician that helped repair our timepieces, and 20 years on, that admiration remains as I see Robert Lee, the third generation in the family that runs the business, fixing a customer's watch. Timepieces technicians are few and far between these days, so it's my lucky day to be given a chance to sit down and have a long chat with Robert Lee to listen to his years of experience on the job.
Hello, I am Mr. Lee Hon Wai, Robert Lee Hon Wai. I'm the third generation in this line now. Other than that, my brothers, sisters and all this, they are not in.
So the shop Wah Sang Brothers, it's been around since the 1930s, if I'm not mistaken, right? So how has the store stayed operational after so many decades? Maybe you can start by, you know, giving me the history of the shop. When was it first opened and what was it like back then?
This shop, as far as I know, was started by my grandfather. That was in the 1920s, okay? That means my father and my uncle were not here yet. On the later part, when he has settled down, that means he's from China, so later he settled down. Then my father came in. That was in the 1930s, you see. And later part, my uncle was being brought in. That is my father's brother.
So maybe you can share how, from your grandfather's time to your father's time, how did you then inherit this shop?
Basically, I only started, that is, in 1979, where I finished my education. That was in 1975. But then I was doing some odd jobs, you see. So from then onwards, after that, I came in because, like I said, my grandmother, you see, persuade. And then I came into this line.
What did you study back then and why were you a bit reluctant to initially inherit the business?
Well, number one, this business, like I said, you see, whatever my father gave me, I can make double the amount of per month, you see. For example, I started off, it was only $80, you see. But when I was doing some part-time work, I can easily earn $200, $250, $180. So I was a bit reluctant to start it off. But then when I started it off, my uncle gave me the encouragement, you see. So I tend to have what you call, I'm interested assembly and disassembling the whatever the clocks are, you see. And then I tend to do it, better and better and better. And then that's how I become have interest in this.
Were you exposed to it when you were a child? Did they bring you to the workshop and ask you to maybe help them with fixing and disassembling and assembling the clocks?
No. That time when we are studying, we are not even near this, whatever their tables are, their master tables are.
And how old were you when you inherited the shop?
19 years old, I started to come in. At that time, I don't even know I'm interested or not. See, but basically, when I was in 20 years, I was already in the shop.
So this has always been a family business that has been passed down from generation to generation, right?
But actually, that time, my parents, they never thought of it, you see. Because my grandfather passed away, you see. When my father took over, my grandfather already passed away, you see, because of the war or whatever. Then my father started, he has to maintain a rice bowl. Right? So that's why I say that time my father was not on a big scale.
So walk me through the process of learning how to actually repair and maintain all these, you know, clocks and watches. How difficult was it?
Well, this line is such a way that, number one, you must know how to assemble and know how to disassemble. But then the odds are, every time when you do a clock or a watch, it doesn't mean that it's always forever that point that is spoiled, you see. There are many, many other points, you see. Today could be on the left, tomorrow could be on the right. So these sort of things is, as you go along, your experience and you encounter, that's how it keeps on moving and moving and moving. But this line, there's no ending one. Till today, we are still learning.
Interesting that you mentioned that, because I always wonder that back then when you first started, the technology that was in clocks and watches back then was probably a bit different compared to what it is now, right? So it must have evolved quite a lot. So how did you cope with various designs and various technological advancements of new watches and new clocks out there?
Okay, like for example, the new technology where they go into the quartz system, you see, that time many companies, they gave us assistance. They got conventions where they teach us how to repair and they tell us, okay, what are the odds and what are the, those cannot be done. So that's how from there we learn, like a mechanical clock and a battery clock is totally a different principle. With a battery clock, if you don't have the circuit boards and all this, it won't work. But a mechanical clock, yes, you just need to know where the problem is and then you solve it. And mechanical clocks basically is run by a spring bar where you wind it up and then that's how the power from one wheel to another wheel, and that's how it works.
As a shop that not only repairs but also sells watches and clocks, do you have to sort of like introduce new style of watches and clocks or new technology of watches and clocks to your customers? Because you receive all these products first, right?
Yeah, every time, whenever any customer comes, okay, we will definitely let them know the latest. You see, but for my shop, it's different. Here, we are not in the highlight or the high-class, high-end watches. See? Here, basically, we are more on the economy side because our area is in such a way, it's not like the shopping complex, see, where a lot of people are, okay, they always want the latest, the most advanced technology, you see. So here, basically, we don't do this type of technology, you see. But we are here more on mechanical and the old clocks, antiques and all this, you see.
What made you enjoy the job? Was it the process of assembling and disassembling watches and clocks?
Yes, you're right. Whenever you assemble something, or you do first, number one, you got to know what's the problem with the watch or the clock. The next step, okay, you have to look into where is the problem. Then once you disassemble and as you go along, okay, whatever needs to be done, we get it done. And when the whole thing has been done, when you fix it up, once the watch is working or the clock is working, well, like you said, mission accomplished. That makes you feel that you have done your job and you are happy. We are satisfied with whatever has been done.
What was the learning process like? Because I imagine that it can't just be through observation, right? You have to also start by learning on the job, right? Is that correct?
Yes. For the job, when you learn how to repair clocks and watches, number one, of course, we've been taught, okay, you release your tensions, okay, the spring bars you have to release so there's no tension. Then you open the main bar, the main piece, and then from there you can see all the views, see? So number one, you got to recognize. If you cannot recognize, then you have to mark. You do your own marking. But as you go along every day that time, these are the clocks and watches you always meet. So more or less you know what is one, what is two, what is three, what is four. You see, unless you have a clock that you have never seen before, then yes, you have to look at it carefully. You separate whatever the section is, and then from there, you clean it up and then you assemble it back.
Sounds like it is a complex process. So how long does it usually take for you to repair a single clock or watch?
Okay, for my experience, which is now already almost 40 years, right? For me, it will be much easier because more or less I know where are the problems, you see? What is the things I have to be done? So basically, if to really fully 2 o'clock a watch, a clock, okay, not a watch, it would take me around 3 hours.
3 hours to just fix a clock?
Yeah, assemble and disassemble, and then at the same time, whatever the problem is, we solve it. Sometimes the wheels are where you have to file it because it's not smooth and all this, you see, you got to refile it, smoothen it, then you see the whole brackets are all widened, then you got to punch it back, you see, jack it back. So basically, a clock, mechanical clock, is around 3 hours. If you really put your heart and mind to do it. But if you like, if you just close one eye and then go ahead, 1 hour or so you can be done. But normally we don't. Yes.
Okay, what about if you want to fix a watch? How long does that take?
A watch, if it's a normal, simple watch, without many, many calibers, that 1 hour, you can just fix it. Because when you take it out, when you clean a watch, now they have the machine to do it. You see, not like those days when my father's time, they have to buy the brushes from thick to the finest. Then they have to slowly wash it, one wheel by wheel, and then they have to, one by one, they brush. If it's in between the gears where you got a lot of oil, where it's dry up, it's sticky, that one you have to, like you said, you got to do your own, modify your own tools, but it's sharp enough to peel off whatever dirt or whatever which is not supposed to be there.
Yeah, that's the thing. Imagine that a watch has smaller components that require a lot more care and precision, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Because watches are more delicate. So you have to really put your heart and mind. Like, for example, if you want to repair a watch, we have to put ourselves in such a position. That means that, for example, okay, our shop is open. A customer wants us to buy a belt, okay, buy a stripe, change a battery. So this type of hours, we don't do. We have to close ourselves during odd hours. That means after when we close. When we close the shop, okay, then from there we proceed, because once the door is closed, nobody will give you a problem where you straight away can concentrate and do the work without any, you know, obstacle telling you to stop and then continue again. So that's how we do our job.
That was a snippet from an episode that we did on Wah Sang Brothers, a vintage shop that sells clocks and watches in Klang. If you want to check out the full episode, look for Only Time Will Tell on our website or the BFM app. Stay tuned, we're going to revisit Cheong San Building in the heart of KL right after the break. I'm Hanif Baharudin and you're listening to I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin. Let's continue our look back on 2018 by visiting again an episode that showcased Cheong San Building, the latest modern cultural hub in KL. In this episode, I spoke to the person that runs the building, Liza Ho, as well as some tenants there. Check it out. If you are a city dweller and in the know, the name Cheong San Building might ring a bell for you. In fact, we featured some of the groups that are based there in past episodes, such as Tandang Record Store and Rumah Atap Library and Collective. This time around, we figure, hey, why not explore the story of the building itself? So this week on the show, we trace the transformative journey of Cheong San Building from an old shop lot house to a vibrant cultural hub right in the heart of KL.
My name is Lisa and I'm director of our art projects along with Snow Ang, and we also run the Cheong San Building as a project.
Lisa Ho is the founder of our art projects. She also runs the Cheong San Building.
My mother-in-law inherited the building about maybe 3 years ago. So we came about 2 years ago to have a look, and it was in a really bad state when we came in. So I brought my partner Snow. With my partners, we opened our art projects in 2013, where we did a lot of pop-up exhibitions around KL. So we were not actively looking for a gallery space, but this came along. So I brought her in and I said, what do you think? Then she told me, hey, I don't think we want a museum now. Then I said, no. Let's take one shop lot and let's see what we can do with the rest. So yeah, then we start planning what we could do with the space. Because there are in total 12 units and the gallery currently occupies only one unit.
So before Liza took over the building, Chonsan used to house the Selangor Chonsan Association and a frozen food distributor.
So the title of the building is a shop house. So it's shop and houses at the top. Lee's Frozen was here for a very long time. They opened in 1962 and this is grandmother's business. So they have only one shop and the family lived upstairs. But they had other businesses around them and other families, which, I mean, I think eventually they all moved out and grandma bought lot by lot. And then the last one to go was the Zhongshan Association. I think they moved to Cheras. So now, after a few years, grandma bought the entire three blocks, basically. And when grandma had it, they run the business downstairs, the butcher business, the office on the first floor. The family house was kept on the second floor. And there were workers living on the top floor. So when we got it, Lee Frozen already moved opposite us, so it was vacated.
Inheriting an old building is not an easy job, especially when the basic facilities were pretty outdated.
We did new pipes through the entire building, new electrical, because it was really old, everything. And we torn down one wall that was in between the courtyard, between the two units. Because we saw it from the top floor and it seemed that that wall was added some time ago to increase the floor space. But we thought that we would just tear it down to back to original. We always wanted to keep the facade. We wanted to keep what we thought it was original from the building. There wasn't much design involved when we did. It was purely on restoration and practical things that we had to do for the building.
With funding from the urban regeneration group Think City, the burden to restore the building was lightened. But now the tricky part is dealing with the remaining empty lots available in the building.
Well, we had an idea of an arts incubator, art residences, something that we're familiar with because we've been working in the art industry. So I guess naturally we're inclined to work with artists to get people involved from the art scene. So then we realized that if we do an art incubator or some sorts, we don't have enough resources to do that. So we spoke to a lot of people, everyone that we knew, basically, of what can we do with this? And there were a couple of offers, like KTV, boutique hotel, things like that, which we rejected, either because, you know, KTV probably is not so suitable for a family home. I mean, my husband grew up here, my mother-in-law grew up here, so no, we didn't want that. Boutique hotels were ready to tear down a lot of things in this building, which we said no. So there was another co-working space who was interested in renting out the entire building. And, you know, drag us for like 8-9 months and it didn't really happen. So then we said, well, we still have to move ahead. Let's talk to now really everybody that we know. And we started with our artists and friends. So then a couple of them say, yes, I'll come in. I'll do my studio there. So then when we finally opened the gallery in January 2017, we have about 4 or 5 people confirmed, which is Tandang Record Store, Malaysian Design Archive, the Rice Cooker Archives, Rumah Atap Library. So after that, I guess we got featured in The Star and we have a lot of calls. Then after we opened the gallery, more friends came and asked us for spaces. And then we started kind of choosing, selecting what could be a good fit so that, you know, there's this art hub basically, yeah.
From there, Liza's aim to create a cultural and creative hub grew organically. I've had a chance to pay a visit and speak to some of the tenants there. Here are some of them introducing what they do.
I'm Sanan from Bogus Merchandise.
I'm Shahida from Bogus Merchandise.
We basically do seat screen and sewing, but apart from that, we do everything DIY, I guess. Everything related to doing it yourself, either it's seat screen or sewing or anything, just do it if you want to do it.
Yeah, we do anything using our hands.
Okay. So my name is Dae Kim. I'm a composer. So I compose for my solo albums or my commercial works.
Hi, I'm Dennis. I'm the founder of Nice. So basically what Nice does is it provides a online and offline platform for creatives to sell what they do. So we sell things from furniture to literature to artisanal food to beauty and skincare. And most of the brands that we represent tend to be small batch makers, independent designers, independent artisans. And what we do essentially is we put them in our shops, we put them online, we help them to sell their products without them having to physically be here. And we kind of empower them to help them to develop and grow their businesses.
I'm Chun Fei. I'm actually a long-term volunteer over here in Ramatap. I actually started off since last year around July. On and off throughout the months, I will come here to open the door and then juggle the place, maybe explain to the visitor what we are doing here. Okay, Ramatap actually comprises of three entities where they share this space.
Hi, I'm Shuet Mei. So it's actually a graphic design studio here. So we do graphic design, and then I do mostly like wayfinding and stuff like that. And then I'm also like part of the design union as well. So with design union, we also organize like some sharing session. So recently we had this Singapore designer called Yong from somewhere else. So he came over here, and then we had like a last minute request to ask him to do a sharing. And then we managed to fit like 60 people in this room. So he has like sharing for 2 hours on Monday night. Yeah. So that's what I do.
My name is Unagi. I'm the barista of this cafe, BBBU.
Hi, I'm Alin. I run a shop called Punawasu. I've been doing online bookselling under a different name, Balai Buku Raya.
I'm Wan and I run Tandang Store. We sell music mostly on cassette, CD, vinyl format, and also other stuff like books and also merchandise from the band.
Hi, I'm Rudy Lefebvre and I run this place that we call Fono, F-O-N-O. We're largely music focused. We do music focused events. We're part of a music collective called Public School. And this music collective, you know, we play a lot of shows and gigs as DJs and a lot of, you know, parties and locations. We've done all sorts of stuff. We've got friends who are producers launch singles here. We've had two of that in the last couple of months. You know, we do live gigs. The Impatient Sisters, shout out to them. They've got a live show next month with us. So a lot of things going on, but we're trying to keep it largely music related.
My name is Nazir. So I'm the founder and co-owner of Tinta Budi Bookshop, selling books mainly on philosophy, literature and arts. Most of them are second books, but we are trying to also to bring like new books from local publishers, local authors and books related to what we are selling.
Hi, my name is Tommy and I'm here having a baker's laboratory. I'm a baker by train and I'm working this bakery with a friend of mine who used to be my old customer.
Okay, so you have secondhand bookstores, a private library, an independent record store, a cafe, and even a bakery, among others, all in one building. I asked Liza about the diversity of the lineup and whether it's done on purpose.
I guess first thing first, we wanted to have a diversity. Therefore, we have from bookstore to libraries, archives, music store, fashion, concept store. So I think arts is too small at the moment. So if you do have somebody else that is doing similar to what you do, it would have been a lot of tension. So we try not to have the same kind of tenants within the same building.
These days, the term hipster is thrown around loosely to describe places such as Zhongshan Building. Is that a fair term to describe the place and its tenants?
I can't even label them whether they're hipster, non-hipster, punk rockers and arty-farty people. Yeah, they're just really diverse. But luckily, I think they all get along together and we started forming like a community. They do their own events, everyone comes in and there's a lot of collaborations because we don't do the same things. So, you know, when Malaysian Design Archive was asked to do this exhibition, they came to us. When Atelier Fitton was going to the KL Fashion Show, he wanted to seal screen some of his stuff. He went to Bogus Merchandise to do the seal screen. So there is collaboration just because we don't do the same thing.
Throughout the time I spent there, I can't help but notice a certain bond between the tenants. Most of them would just drop by each other's shops or studios, chat for a bit to either catch up or have some coffee, and once done, they continue with their day. It's almost as if they're like a family. I asked Lisa, how did that come about?
Yeah, some of them knew each other, and some of them knew their friends, and they came. So, also the architectural plan of this building, it used to be quite low and quite close to each other. So, I think that aspect kind of helped in communications and having to see your neighbors all the time. And the open windows kind of thing, then you know what they're doing. You know, you get curious what others are doing and hanging out, and they hang out a lot. So after they hang out, they know what each other are doing, they feel comfortable, they respect each other, so just, yeah, it's organic.
I'm in the ground level. The ground level, it's where the street level, you know, where we are the first filters of a lot of, people coming into the building. Before they go into a building, they have to access to the first level. So we are at the first level. We have a retail shop in front, which is nice, and my bakery, Tamila Baker, here and behind. So we actually get to meet different walks of lives, right? And then from here, they usually would ask me, you know, what is upstairs or what is in this building? So we are like congregate here first, and then we will share with them. We have a gallery next door, we have a library upstairs, a bookshops, you know. We have two bookshops, yes. Yeah, we have a Vinnie record shop, we have a tailor and a designer, we have a lot of, we even have a fictionist who compile books together. And we have graphic designers. So the relationship upstairs and downstairs, I think, is just, I feel upstairs is where the ateliers and their workshop is. You know, mostly people will go up to, by appointment if they have, it's where people are doing silkscreen printings, you see. So it's their workshop. So I think the relationship is more like when they need a break, they could come down, yeah. But because if I do not have any a reason to go up if I need something, right? So there are little spots, you know, upstairs too, that we do have a little drink and a little chat, you know, to take a pause or, you know, relax for a while. But most of the time, they are pretty up into their own crafts or own work.
I mean, at first, we are not really well known to each other, but sooner or later, we are coping up with each other, and then you feel like family here. So this place is a good hub for people to come and enjoy different type of creativity and different type of people doing their business. So it's totally full of dynamic and having a good vibe.
My team, who are permanently here in KL, you know, they tend to spend a lot of time with the tenants. Even myself, when I come, I visit many of the tenants. You know, last night when we had our launch party, it was my top priority to have all the tenants here as well. And I like that collective vibe, right? So even before we decided, for example, who we would bring in as our cafe, you know, I even went to speak to Pew 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 to say, you know, okay, how can I find somebody who is complimentary to you, right? And this was during just our early introduction, you know, and I wanted to help facilitate that, you know. I wanted to be part of this entire ecosystem more than just one person trying to do their own thing, you know. And I think that relationship is strong because we all recognize that there is this continuous synergy that we're all trying to help one another to create a really vibrant hub, right? And that soul alignment makes it so clear and it makes it so distinct for all of us to say, we're all in this together. We all want to do this together. We all enjoy each other's company, which is very, very important as well, right? And, you know, even last night after the party, the tenants themselves were still staying around here. We were still all hanging out, talking to one another. And that in itself is a true reflection of the community that we have. You know, it's not just people come just to show their face and then they leave. You know, people were here because I think we all want to be here.
Yes, it is. It's quite interesting where we can get more opinions and see what we can do together in the future.
I like it is because like you can actually bounce idea with everyone, and then you can just sit at the cafe, and then there's all these people that who came to the cafe to buy a coffee. Then you start talking to them. Then that's how like we start making friends, and then that's also how we start like building the whole entire community. And then for example, like Hain, who's like selling Hawaiian shirt today, so we actually get to know him because like he's now a regular here, like he's a regular for the PPP cafe. So then like he said, oh, he's selling Hawaiian shirt. So I said, why don't you just do it in my room? Because like I'm not using my room for a weekend, so might as well you just like do it and then make use of the space.
Normally, like, you know, you rent a space that's like an office lot or like a condominium or whatever for like your studio space or like to do things that you're professional in. But like, yeah, but this place is like, you know, like everyone's like around with each other. So like, yeah, it's definitely what makes this place quite more special than like the other places.
I guess when you have like different people living in one building, it's sort of like kind of bring the kampung environment, where you have like a couple of houses in one area and doing stuff together. You also have like celebration, holiday together, festival together. So it kind of brings that kind of like communal spirit in this building, which is great.
I don't know, for me, I feel like I already know everybody. Like I can feel that they have similar opinion that I have in what they are doing and what I am doing right now. So it's really magical, the relationship between the tenants. It's like I feel like family. I feel like everyone sharing things, ideas, something, and yeah, keep doing things together, like can respect each other, stuff like that, you know.
And apart from enjoying the company of one another, they also harness each other's creative minds through collaboration. I'll let Liza share some of the stories, followed by the tenants themselves.
One of the collaborations we had with Malaysian Design Archive is they have a repository of archives of design, and they got this project to show at the National Art Gallery, but they don't do exhibitions, they archive. So they came to us, it's like, can we put a show together? Sure, what do you have? So we have to understand what they have to actually put the show up, you know, in terms of displays and tables and all that. So we had to talk a lot, so they understood what we do and we kind of know what they have as well. So we both collaborated, we put a show in the National Art Gallery. Atiele Fito, when he did his last year Kale fashion show, he was doing some handkerchief with seal screen, I suppose. So he went to Bogus Merchandise to actually do the seal screening. I know Malaysian Design Archive also is working with Tinta Budi on having some old book covers printed in a postcard form. And we also, the spaces are interchangeable. Someone wants to do a flea market in a small space, then our designer Miracle Watts would actually give the space for free for them to run something on the weekends or a workshop. The lawyers here, we have one set of lawyers, Mohendran and Sri. So they run these projects for child rights for 2 days every year. So they utilize two spaces upstairs to run the workshop, screenings, workshops, and talks. You know, they just have to talk to each other, and you find that, you know, your neighbor might just have the resources to do what you wanted.
Yeah, we've got a gig tonight. We're celebrating Women's Day, which is a few days ago, but it's a weekend. Hey, everyone's free on the weekend. And we had one of our friends who's the designer in the building. She designed the tote bag and the poster for the event. Yeah, and we'll be selling that as merchandise, the tote and the poster, signed and hand-numbered. There's only 30 pieces tonight. And celebrating, you know, all the women in the building. There's women who got us in here. There's women who we're collaborating with. We've got women in our team. You know, all power to them. And today is a party for them. There's five female DJs all playing vinyl. Three of them from abroad, you know, that's Singapore, Thailand, and Jakarta, Indonesia, you know, playing with two of our friends in KL who are women. Yeah, and I think this sort of idea came about, it couldn't have come about if we weren't in this building. It's just all this stuff we were exposed to. That's what the building can do for you.
Yes, we do collaborate from time to time. Last month, during the CNY, we do have community gathering with all the tenants around here, and then we have a so-called makan-makan sessions, just to get the bondings. But I wouldn't say that we did approach every single tenant because some are really not suitable, like the one, the noise they're actually doing bakery, which is I mean, maybe we can collaborate, but not for now. But certain tenants like Malaysian Design Archive, we actually share their events in our own FB page as well, just to promote their events.
I guess it's come naturally because we always talk with each other. We always throw ideas when we meet with each other, when we have coffee with each other, and sometimes it just clicks. It's like, okay, you're interested in doing this, we're also interested in doing that, so why not do something together? So, and then it came about from there.
Yes, it's very, very true. People here are super friendly. And then I like it is because like everyone is doing different things. So there's also designers, there's also fashion design. And then there's Tandang, there's Bogus, who's like doing silkscreen printing. And then there's Ibnu as well. So everyone will like collaborate together. For example, like one of the tenant here, Fictionist, so she needs some merchandise. And then like she would just like walk over to Bogus and then to do silkscreen. So it's a very good community where like, if we need anything, we can just like shout out in the group. And then people will like, oh, okay, I have this, I have that, you know. So it's good.
Yeah, we do print t-shirt for Pew Pew Pew. We do some merchandise and t-shirt also for MDA. And Talisman Project with the law firm, Shri. Yeah, we do print t-shirt for Tandang, of course, and for rice cooker. And we print rice cooker floor also.
Yeah, recently our art project and Fono. Fono, yeah.
Nice also. We do live printing for Nice last week. Yeah.
And the bookstore Punavasu. Yeah.
Also Fictionist. Forgot to mention. And Kian also. We do collaborate with Kian during the opening. The Putih Cooks, he do the design, then we do the printing, like during the this Zonshan opening. And Atelier Fitton as well, Joshua and Misha, yeah, we do prints for them as well.
For us, it's like we are like a business entity. So some of the people that staying here, living here, come into the shop and buy the records and buy the t-shirt. And then we also rely on each other here, like certain place having a talk about music, and then we have other place that having a music show happening, and then there's cafe, and then I mean like people are like reacted to each other.
I've been working on my album. It's called Soulless. So when I've been working on this, I've been looking for a graphic designer to work with, because obviously album needs a cover art. So then there's an artist upstairs, a graphic designer. It's a, how you call that? Like a design firm kind of thing. Yeah, it's called Fictionist. Yeah, which is upstairs. So I worked with her into completing the cover arts. Yeah, which was like the last step. So like, yeah, it's very nice to work together. I just performed for the gallery downstairs 2 nights ago for their Chitu's exhibition as well. So like, it's very nice to, you know, like, because when you do like creative things, it's like you're always like stuck alone, like all alone, like, and always like self-torturing yourself. But it's nice to like, you know, like go upstairs and like, you know, there's a coffee shop and like you can talk to other fellow creative individuals and stuff like that. Yeah, I think that's the nice part.
Having a creative and cultural hub like Cheongsan Building in a place like KL is quite important to keep the scene sustainable. This is mainly due to connectivity and accessibility to other things within the city.
I think we started to face this thing when me and Snow work with artists, and they're all like far away, somewhere in Rawang, Puchong. And even the artists themselves, they can't meet because everyone lives so far away because it's a cheap rental out there. And KL has become like no one really comes. So when this came along, we looked at the location and we thought it's quite central and artists can actually congregate here to have the meetings or whatnot. So being in KL, you know, they can also go nearby places to go to hardware shop or to print their things, you know. It's accessible and we have the monorail and the MRT nearby, yeah.
Breathing a new life into old buildings in the city is not an easy project, but one that Liza has successfully done with Cheongsan. Would she encourage more of this approach?
Definitely. I think the old buildings in KL. Some are underutilized, some of them are abandoned. It's not an easy task to take an old building because we don't have a lot of experts who would guide you around how to take care of that old building or how to repair them. And every architect would tell you, just tear it down. Why do you bother? Because you will make more money and it would be a lot easier. It's a shortcut, you just rebuild. But I guess that's not what we are here for, and we don't have much heritage, so we should keep it. If we can find more experts or more people interested in keeping what we have and restoring it, that would be good. Even to have the architect's points of, you know, the support. A lot of architects came, therefore we didn't have an architect. Because every architect will come and say, just tear it down.
Liza admitted that while restoring an old building might be challenging and costly, we should make an effort to preserve our heritage. And what better way to do it than to change it into a bustling creative hub, right? Though for Liza and her husband, there is also some element of sentimentality attached to the building. And that perhaps is something valuable that they want to treasure.
Yes, because also my husband has an emotional attachment to this place. He grew up here, so yes. You need a lot of that as well, and a passion to, you know, bring people back to the place where you used to hang out and play as a kid.
You've been tuning in to I Love KL, and in this last episode of 2018, we've looked back at a couple of interesting episodes that we aired this year. Earlier, you've heard a snippet of our episode on a 90-year-old watch and clock shop in Klang, followed by a feature on the now very influential Cheongsan building with the person in charge, Liza Ho. And that marks the end of this week's episode of I Love KL. If you missed any part of the show or would like to hear the full episodes of the shows we featured, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl or download our app via Google Play or the App Store. We're also available on Spotify, so do check us out on that platform. Don't forget to also follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week in 2019 on BFM 89.9, the business station. Happy New Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.